Hi. I'm proud of all of you to be here today. This is super early. Anyway, there's a lot of new faces. You're like all mostly over here. Let's jump right in. Our time's short. Mothering's hard to cover in 30 minutes. They were kind of broad about what to speak about, and I prayed a lot, and I didn't know where to go. So trust in that God has something for you today. It'll help guide you as a mom and pray for you to have wisdom to train and love the children God entrusted to you. That book is written by Elizabeth Elliot's grandfather, and she was pretty godly, so thinking we could probably just end with that quote because that was really good. One thing as we start, parenting is not how great your kids turn out. It's about your faithfulness as a parent, and specifically today as a mom. We are called to be mothers and be faithful in that, but it's God who saves. It's our job to cultivate their hearts. You will fail. All the moms in here that are my age or even a little younger, we all know we failed, but it's our jobs to be faithful to what the Lord has laid out for us. We're basically following God's design in the Bible, just like he was saying in the quote in that book. Wisdom is applying what we know. For today, this is about us moms, but really parenting's you and your husband. Work hard to get on the same page. If you don't know how, get help. You have awesome women around you that would love to share with you. We needed help, and you need help. You'll be discussing this in your groups. This is something you want to do now. If you are not consistent with each other, it does cause a lot of confusion in your family. Your child's greatest need is what? Salvation, right? Regeneration. Something we can't achieve, but we can definitely be faithful to Scripture and embrace our job as moms. God often uses us as instruments in the salvation of children. Ultimately, your child's salvation is a matter between them and God. To that end, you should be praying to God and instructing your child using all available means to impress the truth of the gospel on their hearts. Today, we're focusing on 0 to 5. That's basically the age in here of your kids. The standard's always the same, but how you get there changes as they get older. It's always good to learn the next stages. So for you guys that are in here, like even Christina, that you have no baby, I'm so proud of you, because in 3 months, it's all going to start. And all this stuff you'll hear today is going to come very shortly if you're not quite at these training stages. How many of you are in 0 to 2 stage? You can raise your hand, Tina. That's a lot. Raise them high. How many have older than 2? Oh, there's a good mix. You can look at parenting as layers. Each layer builds on the previous layer. The early stages, 0 to 2, you're establishing your authority and teaching them simple commands. All they need to know at this point is someone's in charge, and it's not them. From 2 to 5, more training and discipline for their actions, really working on obedience, pointing them to Christ. From 4 to 5, or about 12, you're dealing with attitudes and behavior on a deeper level, giving them the gospel, training in godliness. As your kids grow older into the later elementary and teen years, this is really ahead for you guys, but it's right around the corner, really. Remind yourself not to lecture. No one likes it. Teenagers hate it. Train instead outside of discipline times. Make that part of your thing all day. When you rise up, when you sit down, you want to train and teach. Don't be using discipline to make up for all your lost training. What you train now, in this young age, even from 0 to 2, or your first layer of parenting, is foundational. It's foundational for all your parenting. You're laying groundwork for the gospel by helping them have soft hearts ready to obey you. Your goal being independence from you and dependence on Jesus Christ. Scripture is clear that children are to obey their parents. The 5th commandment talks about it. At least a dozen verses in the book of Proverbs tell children to obey their parents. And the rest of Proverbs is the book of wisdom, where you should go for most of your verses on parenting. And it's really not, doesn't even say parenting, but it's wisdom of living life. All right, maybe the PowerPoint can go up because I'm trying to keep track. Ephesians 6:1-3. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth. Obedience is the act. Honor is the attitude. Neither of these come naturally, and that's where you come in as a mom. Ephesians 6 goes on to say in verse 4, do not provoke them, your children, to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Discipline refers to the systematic training of children. It's laying a foundation to point them to the Savior. I'm not going to talk a lot about discipline per se today, but I heard it's coming in the spring, and that's going to be a great topic, and you have that to look forward to. Instruction literally means put sense to the mind. It's the instruction in Proverbs. And like that book, see, I'm glad I recommended that book. I read that about 30 years ago, so. But, you know, it's her grandfather, so it's good. All right. How did Jesus grow? If you have your Bibles, turn to Luke 2:52. Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. As I thought about this message and I thought about what I wanted to say and I was praying, I just thought, that is just a great parenting verse. And it's the four areas kids need to grow in. All kids have to mature. And remember, they don't do this naturally. So why must children be taught to obey and raised with discipline and instruction, as Ephesians 6 says? They lack maturity in four areas of life that are fundamental for their growth. The same four areas Jesus grew in. He just happened to be perfect. I always wondered what it's like to raise a perfect child. Mine were not. But interestingly enough, the word says he grew in these four areas. Prior to 12, he grew. There's two verses about Jesus' growing up. If you back up to verse 40, which is not in the PowerPoint, it says he grew in wisdom and favor with God and man, and then he went to the temple and preached. And then you have this verse. It's the only two verses in all of the Bible about him growing up, which is crazy. So point one, do I have my picture at this point? Oh. Nobody taught her to have that look. So that's just how they come out. I think she thought, what is that? So that's her new sister. Those are my grandkids. And really, everyone's like, oh, does she like her now? She doesn't mind her. I would tell you that I don't think she knew what she was. So, you know, Brooklyn's really little. She was 15 months here. And, you know, little babies sometimes look like naked mole rats with their big eyes. But now she's cute. But this is natural sin right there. She does not want to be by her. But she's starting holding her hand. It's really funny. Jesse had a lot of people comment and say, yeah, I looked at my sister like that a lot. So, point one, children are mentally immature. That's Jesus growing in wisdom. What is wisdom? Wisdom is a skill of living life God's way, which is found in Scripture. We are to train them to live wisely, something we as moms continue to learn every day. Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go. Again, emphasis on training. Your main job is training. How do we train in wisdom and give them skills they need? First, establish your authority. We're going to talk about this. I brought this so you can look at it. And what's funny is Jen Stout told me she was going to bring one. Establish your authority. Parenting can be like a funnel. You know, Google's great. I found that little thing. Everybody has their own things on funnel. This is your kid's youngest stage. This is your teen years. You are, at this point, you hold it correctly. You restrict them now, and you're establishing your authority and restricting their choices here. And as they grow, what do you see happening? Just more permission at the top, right? Sometimes we get it backwards, and we do this, which means we're really permissive down here. Remember, this would be the teenage years, and that's what we see parents wanting to go like this to their kids, right? You're not going here, you're not doing this, because we start to restrict them. You want a parent like this. Really, this is the time right now, when they're older, right now you want to restrict. When they're older, you're being more permissive, you know, guiding them different in this age. It's a lot easier. I know you guys are in the throes of this. It seems hard right here. It's nothing like a teenager. So I don't ever want you to forget this. Stare at it. A disobedient, defiant teen is a whole different ballgame than your two-year-old, right? You can pick the two-year-old up, physically put them in their crib, and walk out the room. That'd be really nice if you could do that with a 16-year-old. You can't. There's things you can do, which, you know, if we do Moms by Grace for 16-year-olds, which we should. I don't know why we just do this age, but seriously. I usually tell people, if you see something in your little one, especially at 2 years old, and you multiply it to a 16-year-old, I mean, run in fear, because it's ugly. You need to deal with it now. Throwing fits, anger, lying. Everybody's going to do that. But if you let those take root and become character issues and patterns, you're in trouble. So, as we start training our children in wisdom, we must first start with authority. Okay, so I know I speak really black and white and dogmatically. You guys can read grace and sweetness all through the lines, okay? We are people under authority. Even the family has hierarchy. The man's role is the head of the family, the woman's the helper and manager of the home, a child's to obey. Being authoritative isn't a mean thing. It doesn't mean to be a demanding control freak. It's you being in charge while being loving, kind, and trustworthy. You want them to trust you. You are teaching them boundaries. You stand in the place of God. Hopefully someday they will transfer this trust they have in you straight to the Lord. And that's the end goal. Be balanced in your authority. You need to show tenderness and understanding while remaining in authority. It's not you being mean, it's you being firm. You are the mom. Have confidence in Christ. This is a job he handed to you, and what a privilege. You are in charge. We like being in charge. Like we do. We like being in charge from the day we're born. This is your chance. You get to be in charge. Don't give it up. You've been waiting for this day. Children like to think they're in charge. So you must make sure they are not. Even a 6 to 8 month old starts rolling over when you change their diaper. That's all them taking control, pushing limits when you say no. I'll never forget, I didn't have kids, and Beth came over with Ryan Shack, and she said, don't touch something on the table. She spanked his hand, he touched it again, spanked his hand, touched it again, and I'm like he was relentless. And then finally, he decided to stop. And he turned around, picked up like the drumstick, and looked at us and went like this. And I was like, wow, that is just brilliant. Like, he was really pushed in the spirit of the law. He got another discipline. But even the other day, James called Brooklyn, and she's learning to come. She's 15 months, and he called her, and she didn't come. And she gave that look that was in the picture. And he goes, Brooklyn June, you come to Dad. And he walked up to her, and she went, she can't speak. But I thought, that's just brilliant. Like, she knows. Like, I don't know what she said in her little lecture, but they're smart. Don't underestimate what they're thinking about. She knew exactly what she was doing. Not talking, she knew. And he laughed, which is funny, because I would have laughed too, because I do laugh as the grandma, which is bad. But she got another opportunity to get in trouble shortly thereafter. My niece Christine's little boy, when in trouble, will run up and go, I love you, mommy, I love you, mommy, I love you, mommy, and keep stroking your face. And she's like, yeah, I love you too, but you're still in trouble, right? When he pulls the I love you card, she says, you need to obey me, but it's so cute. But it's okay if you think they're cute, but they still need you to be in charge. They are sponges, they will learn. They will quickly see that they cannot get their own way if you establish your authority early. How do we do this? Be consistent. Clearly communicate your expectations and standards. Words need to be clear. If you issue a command, follow through. I cannot express this strong enough. If you're not going to follow through, don't issue the command. From 0 to 2, your training must be immediate. As they get older, you can figure out what they remember when they get home, but chances are they remember. I think you guys try to figure it out, but really inside, you know, they're like boss baby. They know what's going on in there. Connect the consequence to the action. Be consistent, hard, and fast. React immediately. Like I said, discipline's for another topic, but there's a lot of wisdom in this room. Ask questions if you need help. Even to the point of, how do I do it? What do I do? Ask questions. Connect your consequence to the action. Here comes a crash course and things to train, so buckle up. No touch. They don't need to touch everything. It's not theirs. Enough said. Teach them not to touch and spank their hand when they touch it. This is your easiest, really, training. They don't die, they live, and they learn that everything is not theirs. If you call them, make them come. In the beginning, it might be you getting up, which is inconvenient, I understand. It's worth it. Take their hand, say, yes, Mom, and bring them back to the place you wanted them to come. You're training them at this point. Once they get it, and I'd say anytime you kind of start introducing a new training thing, it's a couple weeks. Once they get it, they need to get in trouble when they don't come to you. Making them come to you is a really big deal. Make them come to you. I've seen so many moms say, come here, Annie. And Annie looks at them and goes the other way. And the mom goes, oh, I shouldn't have called her. Yeah, you shouldn't have, but guess what? You did. So the point is, if you call them, they got to come. Think before you speak. Maybe at church, they're so excited and they're playing with their friends and they always run in the little corner and I don't know what they do. They play tag or something, which cracks me up because I don't look at my friends and think, let's go play tag. But that's what they do. If you call your daughter to come at that moment, you really think she's going to want to come? No. But let's say you need her. Maybe in your benevolence and trying to be the kind mom that you are, you walk up and say, hey, I need you to come here for a minute. I'm going to let you come right back. It's okay to be nice. The point is, if you call her and she doesn't come, you just issued a command. So watch your words. Work on making them come, play a game of it. When they're little, you can sit on the ground with your legs open, your husband has his open, they run back and forth, and you say, come to daddy, yes, daddy, come to mommy, yes, daddy. They think it's fun. They don't realize you're tricking them into coming, but it's great, and it works. Teach them to respond when called. I had a very busy child. My last child was the busiest of all firsts of the first four. And she's the one still parenting, that we're parenting. I had to say, where are you? And she'd say, here I am. So that again, it's, you guys, it's not that hard. It's like giving a dog a treat. Like they do, when you make things fun, they learn these little habits. So have them respond to you. Brooklyn hides. And so one time I couldn't find her in the house and I went back and she was laying on the floor in the closet because she was hiding. And I'm like, oh, they got to start teaching her to make a noise. You can do it. Make a noise. Teach them, yes, Mom. This is my trick for you today. This is like magic when it sticks. Clearly communicate your expectations and standards. Your word needs to be clear. But if you make them say, yes, Mom, they obey better. You'll notice you make them do something, they're like this. Even at 14 months, right? You make them look in your eyes. I don't know what it is. It's almost like their heart goes, oh, okay, I'll obey. It really helps. I think they know because they have to acknowledge. I remember Sammy, he didn't speak very well, so he'd go, aya mama. Brooklyn right now, she has no words, she just babbles. She'll go, eh, eh. So we'll say, come here, yes, grandma. She goes, eh, eh. Like, she knows. And if she doesn't say, eh, eh, she literally does that face. Just so she knows. It's amazing to me. Teach them to look in your eye. Oh, one more thing about yes, Mom. When you do that, it helps you have them obey other people. Like if Kathy were to say something to Brooklyn, that's who I'm around, and Jesse's standing there, she could say, yes, Mrs. Richardson, and then they know. They're like, oh, I need to obey this one. It really helps. And I call it magic, but it kind of is. It kind of straightens them up and helps them obey. Teach them to look you in the eye. You say, look at my eyes. That's also a big deal, because what do we want to do? Stephanie used to go like this. I'd be like, are you kidding me? I can see you. Like, but in her brain, she's like, can't see her, she can't see me, I'm good. So I had to tell her to open her eyes, but you guys need to say, look in my eyes. You can even say, like, combine the two magics and say, look in my eyes, yes, Mom. Then you've got double acknowledgement right there. I know it sounds silly. It works. It makes you in charge, and it makes them not in charge, which are equally as important. Obedience must be all the way, right away, and with a right heart. Don't repeat yourself. Every parent has a parenting style, and kids remember their little velociraptors. They learn everything. Whether you count, whether you say their name, whether you say their name with their middle name, whether your veins are showing and they think, I better obey, your child knows when that moment is. So why not make your moment first time? It's easier. I know it's harder to get there, but it's definitely easier. You can also help them obey by preparing them for the next command. For instance, as you get older, you have 5 more minutes to finish what you're doing, and then we're going to start getting ready for bed. It's okay to be nice. Like, I don't want you to think you're walking around like a dictator, but you're preparing them for things. I call it making it easier to obey. It's easier for them. Teach them self-control. I know Beth talked a lot about this, I think, in her first talk. When they eat, when they play, manners, that's all self-control. It's probably your biggest issue in your kids is their lack of self-control. Deal with their whining. Try asking mommy again in a happy voice, not a fussy voice. Imitate them. If your child's going, nah, which they do, and you're like, what? Do it back. Say, no, eh. Say, yes, mom. Sing song. I used to try to imitate my sister-in-law Patty's voice. Because I don't have that sweet voice like Dawn. You sound so sweet up here. That's so great. So imitate that. It works. Especially if you're me, you know, and be fun, Cinderella. We're going to go do this. Yes, mom. I think they think, okay. If you're mean, they're going to look at you with Brooklyn's face. So make them say it again. If they whine, I'm so hungry, try it again, right? Mommy, may I please have food? It works. Switch them. It's put off, put on. Put off the whine, put on the nice face and the nice voice. Teach them kindness. Make them repeat things that didn't sound kind or behavior that's not kind. Say it again. Maybe you could find a better way to, you know, deal with your brother right there. Whatever their little age is, make them redo it. It's all put off and put on. Remember, you're developing habits in them that are good habits. Habits they can fall back on when their hearts are ready to understand it. There's a lot in that word, habits. You know what you want them to learn. You have a lot of things to train. That's why this is a big job, and this is not exhaustive. I'm sure you're sitting there thinking, you haven't even covered what my kid's doing. So, you gotta be wise, you got a lot of help in here. You're training them that this is the right way to behave. As they grow, they will understand why we choose to behave this way. Right now, they don't need all the reasons. You know, you're just keeping that funnel tight, and you're just telling them this is how life's gonna be. Remember, this is the tool that brings them to this maturity. All of this foundational stuff, even in these super young ages, is so that you can train them to be wise. If you wait until they're mature enough to understand why you're doing what you're doing, they will be steeped in bad habits that are hard to break, and then you'll be doing this in your teen years, which we want to do anyway. So make it easier on yourself. Be intentional. Actively discipline and train. And I like how the Trumbull guy said teaching and training. It's both awesome. When we lose it, it's because we're inconvenienced by their sin. I always had to think about that when I was inconvenienced. I thought, it's because I wanted to go do my own thing. But your job is the mom. So their sin is not an inconvenience. It's an opportunity. Opportunity for training. Back to authority. It isn't just about getting kids to do what you say. It's giving them a grid through which to view the world, the way God organized and structured life. It's God's ways that are good, God's ways that are true, and God's ways that are right. So again, under 2, make them obey simple commands. As they get older, start speaking to them about sin and obedience. And you don't want to give them, you know, a 20-minute gospel lecture at this point. You're saying, oh, was that a good choice or a bad choice? That was a bad choice. We need to obey God. Okay? Once you've established this authority, don't give it away. We do this really easily. How do we give away our authority? Anybody want to guess? That's right. We give it away by letting them ask questions. What do you want? Do you want to eat dinner? Do you want to have dinner now? Do you want the blue cup or the pink cup? Do you want to go to bed? Do you want to watch a movie? Do you want to play with your sister? Do you, right? Children become very wise in their own eyes. We train them to become wise in their own eyes, and guess whose fault that is? Ours, right? Restrict their choices. Remember, wisdom's passed on over time. It doesn't come naturally to them. What comes naturally is our sin nature. They really don't have the capacity to make good choices. They're not going to choose right. They're not. Until you lay down a foundation. When we give them so many choices at an early age, what to wear, what to eat, what to do, we're accidentally thinking we're being nice, but really, we're teaching them that it is something we do not want to teach. We are allowing them to be way more permissive. It's that upside down funnel, and their maturity cannot handle this. Because remember, we're looking at the four things Jesus grew in. One of them is mental maturity. These kids, they're smart. They get very prideful with their decision-making powers that you handed to them. They choose the book, choose where to sit, choose the breakfast, choose the jammy, choose the cup, choose the drink, choose the plate. And then we wonder when they argue all day, but we are the ones that are saying, here you go, take all this power. A demanding, wise in his own eyes older child is not something you want. Start thinking, pay attention to all the ways your little one does this all day long. If you don't know, try one day where you give them not one choice. Just not one, try it, see what happens. Also, don't use choices to avoid a fight. We do that, right? Because sometimes the battle is so strong that we're like, hey, you can just do whatever you want today. You think you're limiting their choices, you give them two. Your pantry has 100 items. You take out two. They don't know there's 100 items in there. You just gave them two. What you did, they just got really excited about this power. You were avoiding a fight, and you just gave them a bomb. Because they just thought, yeah, I'm good. I'm in charge. I get to do what I want. J.C. Ryle says, children are born with a decided bias towards evil. Therefore, if you let them choose for themselves, they are certain to choose wrong. If then you would deal wisely with your child, you must not leave him to the guidance of his own will. Think for him, judge for him, act for him, just as you would one that is weak and blind. For pity's sake, give him not up to his wayward tastes and inclinations. Choices in our society have gone haywire. We've become a country where freedom has turned into choice. It is inconceivable to me when I started raising kids 25 years ago that we would let kids choose their gender. Like, where have we come? If you guys think about that, even Nathaniel asked me last night, he's like, Mom, you think non-Christians like think of abortion and they just literally believe that? And I thought, no, it's because they think that the freedom is the choice, but it's not. Freedom doesn't mean you have endless amount of choices to do whatever you want. You in this society, girls, train them, model right choices. That's how they're gonna grow up and be wiser. So first, train them in wisdom because they are mentally immature. Second, children are physically immature. Not only did Jesus grow in wisdom, he increased in stature. To advance in stature is to develop physically. This is one maturity that happens naturally. Babies are born weak, unable to support themselves. As they grow, they get strength, coordination. They're totally dependent on us. They can't fend for themselves. Jesus developed a strong, healthy body. As they grow, give them routines, playtimes, meals, bedtimes, in their own beds, if you can do it. Again, comes back to choices. Teach them what to eat. Make them have healthy choices. Give them their food. Don't be a short order cook. One of my nephews would only eat strawberries. You don't know him, so don't try to guess who he is. Literally, he came to my house and he spent the night. I said, you know, does he have any issues? Yeah, he eats strawberries. I said, for dinner, strawberries and whipped cream. Jill knows this kid. I said, breakfast, strawberries and whipped cream. Lunch, strawberries and whipped cream. He was dead serious. So guess what I fed him? Strawberries and whipped cream. You don't want to be the strawberry and whipped cream mom. Make them eat. Children need to see you modeling good, healthy choices and be actively healthy. Play outside. They watch and model you. That's how they're going to learn best. Sometimes they're wiggly. Take them out. Let them run. Get their energy out. You think about a little boy, he's got all his male stuff packed into two, right? Men are hunters and protectors and providers, and that two-year-old's got it all. They need to run and get their energy out. Don't domesticate them so much that they're in the house cooking with you. They need to play. Are they not going to bed easy? They need to get their energy out. That was me. I still have a lot. I lay in bed with my eyes open and thought, ugh. So run, get them outside. Sports are good for them. Coaches and authority are good for them. When friends are over, be fun. Set up obstacle courses. Time them. And they love it. So be fun. Don't just sit there. The Lord is developing each of our children in a special way. Some tall, some short, some slow, some fast, some walking, some with physical disabilities. Teach them their unique bodies are given to them to bring God glory. They are mentally immature, physically immature, and point three, they are socially immature. This is where Jesus grew in favor with man, literally in favor with others. Humans live together. We are social people. Teaching them to be mature socially is also a lot of training and wisdom. The most dominant thing you probably noticed about your child is he or she is totally what? Selfish, right? 2 Corinthians 5:15. You know why Jesus came? So men would no longer live for themselves, because guess what? Out of the womb, they live for themselves, as do we. A child wants what he wants immediately, and he thinks everything in reach belongs to him. He wants his way, anything to satisfy his longings. Really, our hearts are no different. That's why I laughed, Dawn, when you said at the beginning, it's true, this is us, right? We're just smarter and more mature, so we don't let everybody see our sin. It's difficult to teach a child how to share. It doesn't matter who had it first, right? Sometimes it's easy to do. Two kids are fighting, you say, well, who had it first? Who cares? That is not the point. You know, then you have the kid that Ted Tripp talks about that walks in and goes like this. You think, what's he doing, blessing the toys? No, he's claiming them. And you've seen a kid do that. I mean, literally, you set this down. He touched my water. You weren't touching it. You let it go. No, it was mine. No, that they are like that. And you know, you're laughing because yours do this. When your friends are over, you need to monitor them. Do not be yard egg. You're not the yard aid. You're not the supervisor. You're the mom. Help them get along. Obviously, as they get older, you want to see how things play out a little bit. But when they're 16 months and they're hitting each other, they're not going to be sorry. The biggest and strongest and best personality will win. So don't be a supervisor. You want them to learn specifically, I think you can go, to love and care for others. Be proactive. Teach what's right. Don't always just react. So if there's anything you're learning, a lot of this is just training over and over and over and over and over and over and over. Teach them to be friendly. Look adults in the eye. My first four were very shy, so I prayed for a not shy one. I got her. Jessie was painfully shy to the point that she would bury her head in my chest if someone walked up, especially men. We had to really work on Jessie. I think a lot of times we want to say, oh, it's their personality. No. Naturally, they're born selfish. They don't want to say hi to you. They don't want to. So you have to train them. Teach them to look people in the eyes. If you have a little 15-month-old, you could say, wave to Rachel, wave to Rachel, and take their arm and go like this. You may look dumb, but guess what? They're like, oh, that's fun. And then they know. With your grandparents, make them love them. Make them love your sisters and brothers. Make them friendly. I remember my dad used to say, they don't have to say hi to me. And I was like, yes, they do. And later my dad said, thank you for making them love me. You have to make them, because guess what? They don't want to. They don't want to say hi to everybody. I wasn't going to tell this story, but the Tanawis are a big family. And one time Kelly came over. She's not in here, is she? She goes, it is customary in our family that the kids walk in and say hi to everybody. That's like everybody in this room, right? So literally, they had to walk in the door and hug every person. She goes, don't you think that's a bit overkill? And I thought, I mean, it is overkill, right? But you should do that with your family. They are the nicest little girls. You guys, I think sometimes we want to like help them and think, oh, they don't need to do that. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Family's important. Grandparents are important. Make them be friendly. Teach them to speak to adults. I laugh at my niece, Lissy. She walks in. She's a nanny. She walks in with little June and says, June, say hi to Aunt Tracy. June, tell Aunt Tracy what you did today. Tell her we're coming back next week. And Jane's like, hi, Aunt Tracy. Today, she repeats like a parrot whatever Lissy says. But you know what? Lissy might not even realizing it. She's training that little girl to walk in the house, find the adult before her friends, say hello, thanks for having me. And June doesn't even know she's learning, but she is. Do that. Remind them of your expectations as you go places. Be fun. Role model. Pretend you're introducing somebody. Role modeling's great. We used to act like their bad selves in the car to make them laugh and then say, this is how you should act. And they would just giggle and we would turn around and go, but that's really how you act, right? Like, role model. They love it and they learn. And then that's not you giving lectures. So be fun. Teach them what to say at appropriate times. My non-little shy one had no filter. She said whatever she was thinking. I had to learn to cut her off at the pass. She told a lady that was smoking she had yellow teeth. We were in the stroller at Rocky Mountain Chocolate Factory in the outlet, and this rather large woman bent down in front of her, and all I hear is, wow, that is one big booty. And I was like, I'm not exaggerating. I have about 40 of those. One time a man, of course, to Stephanie, oh, that's who it is. One time a man walked by us and he had no nose. She goes, Mom, that guy had no nose over there. I saw him. And I was like, what did it look like? She's like, he just had two holes. And I was like, oh. So then, lo and behold, here he comes. And I thought, oh no, oh no. I go, Stephanie, don't say a word. I said, I don't want you to speak. I don't want you to say one thing. I want you to look at the ground and we're walking by. Because I thought, what is... So I saved myself. So you got to be smarter than them. Cut them off at the pass. I could see. Now, Nathaniel was different. One time a little midget walked by and he goes... Stephanie would have gone like, wow. Nathaniel walked up and Robert goes, what'd you think? And he goes, well, did you see that kid? But he wasn't a kid. He kind of looked like a man, but he wasn't. I just didn't know, Dad. And I thought, like, that's good. Stephanie, heck no. So just figure out your kids. Teach them to be appropriate. Make them apologize. Again, they don't want to. I don't care if they're sorry. Make them apologize. It's good habits. They will be sorry. Make them do it. Teach them to get along. Catch them making good choices. Be fun. Be encouraging. Praise good behavior. All these things are going to help you train them to be socially mature. They will embarrass you. It's okay. Not only are children mentally, physically, and socially immature, but we also see that children are spiritually immature. Jesus increased in wisdom and stature, in favor with man, and Jesus grew in favor with God. This is a spiritual development that ought to characterize every child of God. Children need spiritual maturity. A child doesn't naturally grow to love God. Other than stature, which does happen naturally, really, we gotta work hard as moms and dads to train all this. Romans says we have some of this in our hearts, but without training, your child will drift away. And then in their own depravity, they will be drawn away. It is our responsibility to steer them in the right direction. Again, it doesn't happen by itself. The bottom line is you must live out your dependence on Jesus in front of your children. Train them scripture. Read Bible stories, family worship, play hymns around the house. Church should never be negotiable. Sunday should be the best day. Make it the best day. Talk about it during the week. Again, when they're young, it's simple things about God. As you grow, you will definitely start connecting the gospel. Two-year-olds can learn they are sinners, that they make bad choices, and that Jesus can help them. Remember, it's layer upon layer upon layer and upon layer. Otherwise, in your funnel, you're being really permissive and then it doesn't work. So you're restricting now. Put them around other people that support what you're teaching. The church and Sunday school are vital. It's a safe place. Ask your teachers how your kids behave. You know what? If someone's mean to them, good. They're mean too. I'm sorry. We all want to think, oh, our kid would never do that. Yes, they would. They would, because you did, right? Like, we do it. We just hide it. We had a high school competition the other day, and two girls were battling. It was Bible baseball. They were having fun, and they called up two girls at the end. I don't know what he was thinking, but he said, you need to write out the books of the New Testament. And I thought, oh, my word, right? They are jamming, writing the words. One girl's going, 1, 2, 3, John, 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 1, 2, just jamming. And I thought, huh, that's a private education for you, because going to a Christian school, the good thing about it is you have all these Bible classes that kind of teaches that knowledge side of life. So I was like, hey, that Christian education surely helped you. And she goes, that's not where I learned that. And I said, where'd you learn that? Mrs. Mueller. I was like, you understand, this girl is 15. What class does Mrs. Mueller teach? Kindergarten. She was amazing at those books. I mean, Stephanie had that class. She doesn't do that, but I don't know. But it's okay. It was impressive. Get around godly families. Ask questions. Watch them parent. Use the Bible. I brought a lot of books because obviously we're not encyclopedias. And I think, oh, I know there's a verse in the scripture about complaining. I heard that one, so that's why the one I brought up. I'm really not a complainer. And I think my mom must have quoted it out of me every day, because every day, do all things without grumbling and disputing. When I was younger, I'd think, what does that mean? Whatever. But now I know it means complaining. Get it out of your kids. Quote scripture. And I have the books if you want to look at them. There's Proverbs for parenting. There's calendars. It doesn't get any easier. What are they doing? They're doing this. Here's your verse. Say this. It's really easy. As you deal with these four immaturities in your children, mentally, physically, socially, and spiritually, you will often feel rote and repetitive. It's probably a number one quality of a mom. They're repetitive. It's okay. Remember, you're doing layer upon layer. Pray for these little ones God placed in your care. Pray all the time. Ask for wisdom. Get help. Guess what? You have blind spots. I may be strong on this stuff, but I guarantee you there's things I don't even know that I missed. As you get older, you start thinking, oh, whoa, I really missed that. I missed this. You have blind spots. Ask your friends. Do it. I'm going to close with this. All of us will definitely have a lasting impact as a mom, right? Everybody's a leader, whether it's good or bad. May it be one that lays a solid foundation on your heart, on their hearts over their young years. J.C. Ryle, obviously one of my favorite persons for parenting. Now may the Lord teach every one of you that sin is that abominable thing which God hates. Then I know you will mourn over the sins of your children and strive to get them off the road to hell. May the Lord teach every one of you how precious Christ is and what a mighty and complete work he has done for our salvation. Then I feel confident you will use every means possible to bring children to Jesus, that they may live through him. May the Lord teach every one of you your need of the Holy Spirit to renew, sanctify, and quicken their souls. Then I feel sure you will urge your children to pray without ceasing and never rest till the Holy Spirit has come down into their own hearts with power and made them new creatures. May the Lord grant this, and then will I have a good hope that you will indeed train your children well. Train them well for life, train them well for the life to come, train well for earth, and train well for heaven. Train them for God, train them for Christ, and train them for eternity. Amen. That's J.C. Ryle, Duties of Parents. You should all go buy that book. And I'm done.
Thank you, Tracy. That was great. So today our first scenario for our panel is, I feel like I'm in an obedience battle with my 2-year-old all day long. I've been trying to help him obey by giving him choices like, do you want to wear the red shirt or the blue one? Or do you want a banana or a pear for breakfast? He still gives me a hard time sometimes, but I think we're arguing less. Is it okay for my 2-year-old to decide these simple choices? Let's hear what our panel has to say.
I don't know what else to add to that, other than we know that foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, and they're going to make wrong choices. But even when it comes down to, I chose, you know, 2 things that are appropriate for them to wear and they got to choose it, you're still handing that control over to them. And they don't need it.
Yeah. And again, you want to be nice, right? There's times you're going to give them choices. So I really like what you said, Janae, about all of a sudden you might think, oh, whoa, they're getting pretty powerful. Maybe you can start noticing, have I not been making decisions for them? And I was even talking to Natalie the other day, and I was saying it's so important younger, and she said, well, it's so important at 5 still with Brenny. So you want to talk about that a little?
Yeah, I think I was thinking through the positives of not giving choices, and there is, it's an opportunity for them to trust mommy and to obey with a happy heart, and Tracy mentioned that. And it kind of just takes away a lot more of the discipline that you would have to do because you're setting them up to kind of, and they don't know, or they're going to change their mind, or they're going to have a complaining heart, and then there's just more discipline that you need to follow through with. And so the routine of, and as you have more children, it's a little more, because this is what we're having for breakfast, and this is what you're wearing in the morning, and this is what, anything that you're just taking those choices out, and then you're really kind of simplifying even in their response to need to trust mommy and to have a happy heart about it. And that's where I think thinking about just with your two-year-old and obedience battle, and that it's a regular part of our day as a mom, and Tracy mentioned to not be inconvenienced by it and should not be surprised by their need for discipline, two and under, up to my seven-year-old, you know, that it to not be surprised. And that's I've needed to set my own expectations and get my heart ready for when a day is filled with constant discipline, and I'm not totally blown away by that, but I needing to have our own self-discipline when it comes to our attitude towards disciplining our kids. It takes energy to have self-control that we need to discipline them in love, where that's a constant need to remind my own heart and soul that it to not be surprised and to allow time in the day and not be inconvenienced by it, because it's taking me away from whatever I think I should be doing or not doing or whatever. But
that when they're young, you are creating opportunities for them to obey, and that's a lot easier to do when they're young and when you're at home. And so even though you think you're in, like we said, making two appropriate breakfast choices or two appropriate clothing choices, if you're saying, this is, like Natalie just said, this is normal routine, I'm saying, you're saying yes, mommy, because I said this is what you're going to wear. Those opportunities to discipline are easier to do at home, and they're easier when they're younger. So the more they say yes, mommy, then when you're out and you have to say no, or you have to say, this is what I'm choosing for you at the restaurant, you know, or whatever, that's normal. It's very normal for them to just say, yes, mom, okay, that's what, you know. Otherwise, now you're in an obedience battle at the restaurant or at the park or at wherever, and you're having to deal with it way more in the public than you ever wanted to because you didn't set that up at home.
And I think what Natalie brought up is important too about trust. You want your kids to trust you. It's a really big deal, and it's a really big deal when they get older. All the older moms in here can attest to that. I remember one time Nathaniel made a decision and he got in the car, and he was probably 10th grade, and he said, you know, mom, I'm not going to do this. And he gave me this big reason why he wasn't going to go do something. And in my heart, I'm thinking, yeah, well, you aren't going to do it anyway. But I just was like, oh, that's so great, you know, and thinking, oh, good. But a lot of that trust is they need to trust you as parents, that you know what's good for them. And so if you are not limiting them, you're really honestly hurting that trust that they have in mom knows what's best, which we need to have towards Christ, because life gets a lot harder than the two-year-old picking their food. You know, sickness, anything comes later, hard life comes later. They need to trust the Lord. And I know it sounds funny, but you're doing a lot at 2 years old to help that.
And I guess giving the choices on food, if you were to ask my two-year-old Finley what she would like to eat, she would have ketchup, bread, fruit all the time.
Strawberries and whipped cream.
Yeah, that would be her go-to.
Yeah.
And so we've definitely decided to try and keep a consistent routine as much as possible, and that helps set their expectations for what you're expecting of them, but also for yourself, and keeping things, knowing what you're going to discipline for. Everybody eats at the same time. My two-year-old always eats in her high chair, eating the food how you've decided, whether it's you scooping or them, and no spitting or throwing anything off the tray. And those, that does start even younger than two, when they start to eat, and this is what we're eating. And, you know, an awesome little discovery of limiting snacking. where then they actually eat their food. You might be starving them. They're not really starving, but, you know, where they're actually hungry for whatever food you put in front of them. That then just helps in the process. It's not a perfect thing. It definitely, each kid may vary in their more discipline for it or less and more of just an eater or not. And but those battles are, they can seem, they are daily battles. They can, and but the consistency in it, and they do learn that this is the expectation with that.
I was gonna say one more thing. I think it helps with their decision making as they get older too. You've all seen the child that can't make a decision. Well, I think sometimes because their choices have been so wide that if they choose this, they're gonna choose wrong. So I don't know what to choose, right? When you are modeling decision making, you hope that that models for them being able to even make a decision. So the goal is not that you're raising these little robots that do what you say. The goal is that you're training them to make good choices. You're not modifying behavior, you're training them.
That's good. I had a question, but I think you kind of answered it. But I'm going to put it out there anyways. What if some of the moms out here are thinking that it's not fair to limit the choices of their kids? What would you say to that? Because, I mean, let's face it, we all get to make our own choices. So, you know, you're thinking, oh, I'm taking the choices away from my kid. That's not fair. So,
no, I like being married and letting all the choice responsibility fall on rubber. Just kidding. Life's not fair, girls. That's all I'm going to say. It's really not fair. Look at how much diversity is in this room of anything. I mean, it's not fair. I don't know how to say it. It's not fair. If they don't learn that at two, good luck. I mean, I could say a million examples of how different everybody's life is. Why did I get, you know, superhero saint mother and my kids get me? I mean, there is, you know, some of you grew up in non-Christian homes. That's what God has for you. Your life, kids all get... They don't need to be treated fair. And you know what? One thing I want you to always remember, your standard is always here. It's always Jesus Christ. Sometimes getting to that standard might look a little different. Your training of each kid, where they're at, like Sarah and I were talking in the car, maybe you have a whiny one. So you're working on something different than you're working on the one that's always happy. But be aware, something's happening with the happy one that's not good either, right? We tend to gravitate towards what we think's best, but like they're all different. You parent each kid kind of based on them, with the standard always being the same. And I hope that's not confusing, but life's not fair. And my kids are all adopted except one. You know, some school was easy for some was really hard, and we would tell the one that was hard, I know it doesn't seem fair that your brother, it's easier for him and this is harder for you. You know what? That trained that child in perseverance. And hard work. So don't feel sorry for them. If you do, think of yourself. Like, life's hard.
All right. Thank you. That's great. Thanks. Okay. So let's hear from Colette and Darcy's table about the second scenario. You can just answer it. I'm going to read it.
We started talking about how if it's a sin issue, like that you and your husband are not agreeing on something, then we all agree that you definitely should be able to come to him graciously, suggest, kids, are you not preferring your husband then? So maybe some stuff needs to be assessed. obsessed in your own heart as well with things like that. Gary talks about just making sure that we are honoring our husbands and submitting to them in choices, but also how important it is to get on the same page, so whatever it is that they've decided that they want for our family, that we're submitting to them as if it's not sin, but that if there's something that we difference on, that we're not bringing it up in front of the kids, but setting up a time outside of that to discuss so that we can both be on the same page to know that this is what we're doing with our family. Yeah, but just how easy it is, we said, just to feel like we're home with our kids all day, and so it's easy to be prideful and think that my way is the right way, and that's not always true. And, yeah, just getting on the same page, whatever it is that we decide as a couple, but it's not as an issue as a preference, but just having the same expectations for our kids, because it's also not fair for them to be spanked for one thing all day or disciplined, and then dad gets home and it's no longer an issue, or vice versa.
That's great. Thank you. Okay, so the question is, my husband and I can't seem to get on the same page with parenting. We differ on everything from sleep schedules to meal times to how our children speak to us. I don't think he means to, but I feel like he is actually undoing what I have trained and disciplined all day. I'm tired of feeling like the bad guy. How can we best align our parenting goals? And let's hear from the panel.
So thinking through it of less as a parenting issue than it is a marriage, kind of marriage issue that has direct effects on your parenting, where there's the unity within your marriage that throughout whatever issue it's going to be, there's throughout your marriage, there's going to be different things that you need to be unified in and seeking that with your husband and striving for that unity in order to rightly reflect the unity of the Godhead. So really, really important to, if it's, and this is all speaking through experience in our own marriage and our own parenting and through that the last 7 years of having children, that it needs to be a humble approach, us as wives, as moms, if it's something that you're disciplining consistently for throughout the day, that then if dad comes home and it's not being enforced, and then in my own heart, I'm growing bitter because it's not being enforced, and it's just, but in that bitterness, it's because I'm not actually communicating clearly to Patrick that this, you know, and I'm just building it up in my own heart. That's in my own heart and lack of communication to him. And there's, sometimes there's just an unawareness of it, and an, you know, especially your first, like that was so much with us, and having then even with Bren of those early years, and kind of we were on the same page in a lot of things, but then just practically really, really needed to have conversations, and it not being, hey, I heard this or I read this and this is needs to be the only way that we do this and we have to do this, but such a humble approach to his leadership in our home and togetherness and supporting of one another. And yes, you practically, or you just realistically are home disciplining more hours in the day than he will be generally. But being on the same page in what specifically you're saying and disciplining for, and that consistency that then even his leadership in how, in taking that on when he comes in, you know, in at the end of the day, and not that it's like, okay, I check out now, I'm done for the day. It's not that at all, because it's a, but it is a support in being on the same page, and where takes a humble approach in communication. But some, you know, of starting just with, hey, I just want to make sure we're on the same page about this, and kind of either our table talked about like setting aside a time to talk about it, and including also including other godly counsel for him as a man. If you know, this is a awesome environment, and there's so much to be learned and grown through in at Moms by Grace in particular, that of being around other families in general, but also other dads, and growing in that as the leader of our home, and their leadership in that.
So I took more of a specific, just where we're at right now. Sometimes we'll have a disagreement about how to handle an issue, versus like all encompassing being on the same page. So we have people often, if we get into a conflict about how to handle something, he's like, all right, just text Tracy and whatever she says, we'll do.
That's a lot of power.
Doesn't happen all that often anymore, but
it did.
But it did. But I know now, I have another counsel would say, go to the throne before the phone. So I have my little chart that I have to go through to humble myself first, because I know that my own heart deceives me, and then I go to the Word, ask God for wisdom, and then we've agreed to go to counsel. And so if it's sending him to a godly older dad, some of the men that he knows, then it's okay, you go talk to so and so, whatever he says, that's where we're gonna come back, talk, and agree that that's where we're gonna move forward. But we've gotten to that point where it's like, cool, go seek counsel, we'll follow that. I guess you have to have those people in your life though, so that starts now, so that you do trust the older people.
Yeah, cool. It's great being the older person. I don't know how we got here. I think too, like, we work so hard, right? We talked about this crash course and, you know, don't touch, don't hit, be nice, repeat your right. We are constant. Please don't speak to your brother. Try again, say it again, try again, ask nicely, right? I mean, that was 2 seconds. This is 8 hours a day. He walks in, they start doing all their stuff, and he ignores it, and you're thinking, I see. I've just done 8 hours. And within 5 minutes, you have undone 8 hours of work. So I used to joke with Robert and say, all that, I'm not going to deal with tomorrow if you don't deal with it tonight. And we would just giggle and laugh, you know. And we had always tried to be funny about things. He's like, you're right, I missed it. Think about your husband walks in. We think all day, right? Women, right? Give me a minute while I analyze everything, right? That's the shirt we should be wearing. Because we think, oh no, that's not gonna look good at 15. Oh no, that wasn't nice. Oh no, right? So we think all day, and our minds have them at 40, and how they have their own children. And husbands are at work. They're not thinking of your children. I mean, hopefully they do a little, but really they're working, right? So when they come in and we're like, I am done, here you go, right? They just wanted to come in from working hard all day. So be careful what you throw on them, is exactly what Natalie said. And talk to them. They don't know what you've done all day. They're not mind readers, really they're not. We kind of are mind readers, but they're not. They don't know what we've done. You're not helping them if you're not saying, hey, call them and saying on the way home from work, I've been dealing with so-and-so all day long, whatever. Just like a child doesn't want a lecture in a time of discipline, your husband doesn't want all these lectures either. You're much smarter to talk about these things or be funny, you know, when the kid is snotty and they say something, just look at them and go, right? Like, I'm dying, I'm gonna die. They respond much better as we do, right? You know, I think of the Proverbs, and Solomon walked around. I picture him walking around like this with the sun going, see that over there? Not good. See that, right? That's how you train, right? And with your husband, they don't know what you're doing, so talk to them. Talk to them outside of conflict. Girls, conflict is never the time to bring up everything that's been bothering you all day long. Ever. Remember that. Just smile. Fake it, grate your teeth, whatever you need to do, just shut up. But get on the same page. They don't They can't read your mind. That's all I can say. You have to talk to them. They're nice. Your husbands like you. They want to help with this parenting thing. They were part of the parenting. They'd like to be part of it. Robert used to actually, as they get older, you'll see it's a, you know, in this ages, you just want a break. You're just like, please, somebody deal with all this all day long. When they're older, they need to engage. So if that means he calls you on the way home from work and that's how you set it up, I never even knew Robert was doing this. Later goes, that's why I call you every day. Because, you know, I'd be like, oh gosh. So this is what I worked on. And they don't know. So tell them, this is what I've been working on. And this one, that one, you know, they were great today, whatever. Your husband doesn't want to walk into a minefield. And I think often that can happen. I heard of a girl the other day. She said her sister's husband never comes home after work. And I was like, that's interesting. What does he do? He's not a Christian. Both of them are not saved. Well, he goes and drinks with his buddies every day after the office. And I thought, he doesn't want to come home because life's hard at home. And girls in our homes where we're wanting to raise these kids to love the Lord, you want to be on the same page and you want to be kind to that husband. You don't want to throw everything on him. Be proactive. It's just like parenting. Be proactive.
Just on the subject of training, if you're not memorizing with your kids, even as young, how old was Sadie?
Like 1.5
Yeah. Years. And I was amazed at how much she could memorize.
That even if they don't
several
understand
years ago.
It.
Yep. Because you can draw back on those things and you can say, what does the Bible say about that? So I have a list of simple verses on simple things. You can come take a picture of it. I have it written down. But that's huge in training.